Today's What Do You Think program is brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
10 minutes past 10 o'clock, and our guest in the studio today is Nathan Prill. He is the executive director of the Huron County Farm Service Agency office. We're going to be talking about some of the things going on in the office and things that farmers and agri people around the area need to know. Thanks for being with us.
It's good to be back, Craig.
Kind of your off-season as far as you've gotten through the reporting of crops. So now you're into other things, because it's never a dull moment, I understand, at the office.
No, it isn't. We are finished with crop reporting. We're doing some cleanup work on the direct program and trying to catch up with conservation. And now we're just trying to get everything sorted and work with some of the other programs and catch up in some of the areas where we haven't been able to over the last 3 or 4 months.
Understand you had a good turnout as far as people wanting to be considered for the opening on the county committee.
Absolutely. Yeah, this year we have 5 nominees, and the county committee will go through the process of certifying which of those nominees will be eligible, if they're eligible to serve. From there, we'll form a slate of candidates, and ballots will be mailed out right around November 4th. So voters in the western portion, the western third of Huron County, will be voting this year for who will be the new member of the county committee.
And they vote in November, and the person takes office in the next calendar year?
That's correct. Yep, in January.
And by being eligible, they probably have to be using programs through the Farm Service Agency and such, so that they kind of know what you're doing there.
That's correct, yeah. To be eligible to vote, you have to be, you know, over 18 years of age. You have to have an interest in a farming operation and you know, really be eligible to vote, not be convicted of anything in the past. And there are a few other eligibility requirements that the county committee goes through to make sure that all the candidates are eligible.
Okay, and that is something you do rotate. Do you have 3 different districts, and every year we have a different one come through?
That's correct, and they serve, once a person is elected, they serve a 3-year term. They're eligible to serve 3 terms for a total of 9 years. And we also have an advisor to the committee who represents different parts of the community, depending on what part of the country you're in. If there's a socioeconomic or racial group that's not normally represented, we can have an advisor on the committee to give us the perspective of different aspects of the community.
Terrific. Now, we just got through with the SURE program for 2009.
That's correct.
But that isn't the end of disaster programs that you have to deal with.
No, it's a 2-year process. And so
That as a person to me seems like, you know, 2 years, oh my gosh, to get, you know, compensation for a disaster seems like, oh my gosh, that's a long time to wait. That's like Katrina.
That's right. Well, with the 2008 Farm Bill, we have a permanent disaster program, the Supplemental Revenue Enhancement Program, and that is a program that considers your entire farm income, your entire losses, and then sets a payment based on that. In the past, the disaster programs were somewhat political. They'd be ad hoc, and if there was a terrible disaster, you know, Congress would write a disaster program and we'd implement it. Now, with the 2008 Farm Bill, we have a permanent disaster program. Of course, that hasn't stopped us from having some ad hoc disaster programs, like the soybean program I spoke to you about. Gosh, I think that was back in December. And so while we still have a few political disaster programs, and with a year like this where states down south are experiencing terrible drought, you know, sometimes we do have additional programs that may be available and could be available for Huron County farmers as well. But our permanent disaster program exists right now, and it's based on income levels. And quite frankly, because Huron County is such a diverse agricultural community, if you have a loss in one thing, you're not likely to have had a loss in everything. So this program is more for total farm losses. What we're finding is that farmers who had wheat losses in 2009, if they had sugar beets planted or if they had a lot of corn planted, it's actually taken them out of the program. So out of the 200 or 300 applications we had for the 2009 SURE program, that sign-up ended on July 31st, only a handful were really eligible for a payment.
And with the program built into the Farm Bill, there's probably a set amount of money they allocate each year. Does that make it problematic as to how many disasters they can handle?
Well, the ad hoc disaster programs have a specific dollar amount. Now, with these permanent disaster programs, there is no limit. So if you're eligible for a payment due to farm losses, it's an unlimited funding stream as far as that's concerned.
Is there concern that might change because Washington isn't looking to have an open checkbook and, you know, there's this whole thing with the debt ceiling just kind of took it to home that there looks people there or some of them are looking to really cut?
Yeah, we're in the process of writing a 2012 farm bill, and we always want these programs to work for farmers in a meaningful way. And so when you write a disaster program, sometimes you may not see all of the intended consequences. So in the future, I'm sure Congress will be looking at programs like the SURE program to see if this worked in the way that they intended, if it distributed money the way that they intended, and if it's helping people the way that they intended. And based on kind of what they, how they analyze it, you know, this program may exist after 2012 or it may not. And currently with the process that we're dealing with austerity in government and reduced budgets and financing issues, it's very likely that a lot of the programs that we work with currently will really be examined to make sure that they're having the desired effect.
Because if they're profitable in the long run, you know, that can help. You know, we don't have any as many people going out of business, all of this stuff that snowballs.
Yeah, a lot of these programs were originally envisioned to provide a safety net, to provide that safe, secure, and stable food supply for America, and also to support farmers and agricultural economies so that rural communities wouldn't be vulnerable to the to price shifts, to periods where there was lack of financing. And as the farm economy has changed, I think we'll see USDA programs changing as well to meet the new needs in the 21st century that are arising. Part of that is, you know, integrating beginning farmers into farming operations, to examining how disaster programs work, to seeing if direct payments really are the best way to distribute farm subsidies. So it seems like everything's really on the table right now.
Most of the programs that you have in your office require the crop to be insured to begin with, which kind of makes me wonder about disaster payments. Wasn't it insured to begin with?
That's right. And that was new for 2008. A lot of the old disaster programs did not have an insurance requirement. And the ones that did, it would be difficult to have enforced it after the fact, because once the program was implemented and the dollars dispersed, going back and making sure that those insurance requirements were met was a pretty difficult thing. And in a lot of offices, that would have been a difficult thing to accomplish. With the new programs, yeah, we do require insurance. For the Farm Storage Facility Loan Program, we require crop insurance. For our disaster programs, you have to have had insurance. That's a recent development, and we'll see how that kind of pans out in the future.
Kind of got a little off track here. We were talking disaster programs and such. You are thinking maybe there may be some crops in Huron County that could eventually get a disaster declaration.
Absolutely. One of the most challenging things about this crop year was, you know, we have until June 30th to report small grains, and we have until July 15th for the rest of the crops, corn, sugar beets. Well, since the planting season was so delayed, farmers didn't get out into the field. You know, we had some corn planted well into June from producers that last year planted late April and early May. And we had prevented planting corn, hundreds of acres, that is quite rare for Huron County as well, on some acres that were not tiled. So we had to compress our crop reporting season into a few weeks, whereas in past years, we had months to do that. And so it was quite a push for time in the last couple of weeks there. And this year, of course, we had a new crop reporting system that was based on the web. You know, we had been using a 30-year-old, you know, IBM off-the-shelf technology that was steady and reliable, but it was didn't have all the functionality that we, you know, would want, you know, in 2011. So now we have a web-based crop reporting system, and we're still working the kinks out. I can tell you honestly, on this date, I do not know the total acreages planted in Huron County because this software is still being developed. But we did get all the crop reports in. We're still in the process of cleaning up some things, but everything went pretty well given the delayed planting season. And for crop losses this year, you know, it's a continual process. So the threshold.
Nobody knows what next week is going to be like.
That's correct. That's correct.
Even the weatherman can't get it quite right.
Especially on a year like this. And so we are working to monitor the situation throughout the growing season. We're going to make sure that we, you know, accurately capture what the losses are out there, especially since some sugar beets look tough in different parts of the county. Some dry bean acreages are just not doing well. You know, there are some acres over by Elkton that they just keep receiving rain. And there are some parts, you know, just a few miles away that haven't been getting rain. It's been a strange year. And really, the threshold for us submitting information and requesting a disaster declaration from the governor's office, as long as we have one producer with at least a 30% loss, we can go after a disaster declaration. So we do it every year. Because again, if we do get an ad hoc disaster program that requires a secretarial designation, we don't want the farmers in Huron County to miss out on that.
If they're eligible.
If they're eligible, of course.
And we got a late start on a lot of the crops. Have they been gaining ground with this hot, wet weather? Like corn loves hot, wet weather. We were looking at it. You know, you were saying some of it didn't get planted till June and, you know, knee-high by the 4th of July. Well, since the 4th of July, it has really been kicking up.
Absolutely. It's been the last couple of weeks in areas that have been receiving adequate rainfall. It's been quite good. The concern we have right now and what we're especially, you know, concerned about is since corn was late planted, if we have an early frost this year, you know, we could experience some pretty extensive losses across the county. And so that's something we're certainly, you know, keeping our fingers crossed for, hoping that that doesn't happen. Because there are some areas of the county where, you know, crop conditions look quite good, even compared to some areas in Tuscola County that haven't received the kind of rain that we have. And so hopefully, you know, we can recover a bit from the rough start we had and see at least an average or even in some areas a decent 2011, you know, crop year.
But even the nice, warm, muggy weather can bring with it things like a fungus. It could bring wheat usually can get like vomitoxin or something if it starts getting too funky. All these things, wheat kind of coming off already, but I mean, you know, there's always a concern no matter where you are in farming.
Absolutely. We're seeing the sprayers and the dry beans right now, you know, addressing some of the wetter weather conditions we have. And, you know, again, hopefully conditions remain good and, you know, we catch up from the late start and, you know, we don't have to deal with a disaster, you know, a widespread disaster. But, you know, for those producers that have been impacted this year, you know, certainly if delayed by a few years, you know, that program will be available for through 2012 to be certain. And then anything else that comes up in between we'll work with.
Now, is there a specific way if you have a loss or you have to replant, do you have to notify your office in a certain time frame so that you're part of the equation?
We will get information on the 2010 disaster sign-up program here probably in the next couple of months, and we'll begin sign-up for that. We're in the process of closing out 2009, and like I said, we had a handful of payments from, I believe, 200 and some disaster applications. So we're working on getting those payments out and really preparing for 2010.
Some of the things you wanted to talk about was modernization. You talked a little bit about the web-based thing. Is it getting more and more internet savvy to be a farmer?
It is. With government, you know, sometimes it's difficult with constricted budgets. You know, it costs more money for us to implement programs when we have to learn to use new technology, when we have to implement that in the local office. But as I said, we were using 30-year-old computers, 30-year-old technology, and it was resulting in delays. We haven't always known, let's say, if there was a missing form that we needed. Each one of our programs has its own separate kind of software. They don't talk to each other. And so if you fill out a disaster application, I won't know until after I load that application that you need to fill out another form, maybe for adjusted gross income or an actively engaged determination. So there are new procedures, new processes in place that we're working on. We're blueprinting and field testing some of them. And what it would do is it would allow all of the individual programs to communicate with each other, so that when you come into your FSA office, when you work with the United States Department of Agriculture, when you go into the office, the computer system will tell us if we're missing a form, so that you're not making multiple trips into the office. We always like to see farmers, but we know they get a little bit annoyed when they're in five or six times just to do an annual sign-up, and that's something that new technology can address in a meaningful way.
But there is also concerns about security. The more people that have access to a big package as opposed to little individual ones, I mean, all these things have to be addressed as well.
Absolutely, and rightfully so. You know, beginning farmers are becoming more tech savvy. You know, we have an issue now where the technology that a lot of farmers have in their tractor for GPS, and a lot of the GPS technology that, you know, fertilizer, you know, sales entities and the elevators have, it's better than what the United States Department of Agriculture has. And so when a farmer comes into the office to report a field and they say that they have 76.3 acres of corn there, the USDA map that may date back from the 1970s or 80s may say that it's 76.4. And right now, to do a farm record change is tremendously work intensive. So with new technology, we're hoping that if a farmer comes in and says, listen, that field is 76.3 acres, we can use that number, we can draw field boundaries. If farmers are cropping their fields in different areas or splitting up fields in a way that we don't have recorded, we can do that as a simple record change rather than having to fill out six forms to get that done. So that's something that technology can address, and hopefully soon, because it becomes frustrating as private sector technology exceeds the capabilities of the government, and it's a disconnect. And in order to be in compliance with our programs, you know, you have to have 100% of your acres planted and reported. New technology will allow us to work with the farmers in a way that will be less cumbersome for them as they use new technology and as they want to know what their payments are and as they want to track things on the web. It's going to be a very interesting couple of years, and we look forward to those changes.
Did it kind of kick off with the satellite mapping that was done a few years ago that went from a, you know, basically here's a drawn out thing to here it is from space?
That's correct. Yeah, we're switching, and it's getting to the point now to where we're getting that imagery updated more frequently. So before, maybe we'd have 2005 and then 2008. Now we're getting it 2011, 2012, so that we're seeing those images in real time, or as close to real time as a government office could possibly hope for. And that allows us to use that imagery for compliance purposes.
See if there's an extra building that wasn't there before.
That's correct.
Taking some land out and doing something else with it.
Yeah, if you've built a house in the middle of your conservation field and your set-aside acres, we're now going to be able to see that without having to do field visits. And that's going to be an important thing in the future because, I mean, obviously, if a farmer is receiving a benefit for a set-aside acre, we want to make sure that that acre is being used, you know, in the correct manner.
Well, it also frees up your people to be in the office doing some of the other work rather than running around verifying things that could be verified with the satellite.
And frankly, with budgets, you know, our ability to go out into the field and travel, our ability to use temporary help, our ability to use field reporters, that's being severely limited. And we've seen that start in 2011. 2012 is going to be worse. So we need to be able to do these things in a more efficient way. We need to be able to tell farmers what they need to do to be in compliance, and we need to be able to do that in a way that's easy on them and easier for us, because we're just not going to have the staffing levels in the future that we currently have.
Is a kind of a painful transition for the older farmers who aren't as computer savvy, who the younger people come out of college today with an agriculture degree, they know computers and they know how to surf around the net to find what they want, and they understand about forms and how to submit them and electronic signatures and all the rest. Farmer who's been doing this for 40 years, he had to start getting some savvy, but really didn't have to grab both horns of the bull.
Right. Well, and that's part of our job. You know, part of our job is making sure that if there are changes or if there are new programs, that we're explaining it in a way that farmers can understand, that doesn't take, you know, 3 inches of paperwork to sort out. Part of our job is making sure that these programs work on the local level. And that may be our most essential job, and in some cases our only job. Because they are so confusing and it involves complex legislation, and we get the Federal Register and we have all of these rules. When we implement those programs on the local level, we want to make it as user-friendly and as easy to understand as possible, and regardless of whether or not the farmer is 92 years old and planting, you know, a few acres, or if you're a tech-savvy beginning farmer or farmer who's integrated technology into your tractor. That is our job, and that's something that we have to continually work on to make sure that everyone is receiving the benefit that they're eligible, whether you're a corporate farm or whether you're a smaller landowner and farmer.
That's the question there. How small of a farm can you be and still be eligible for some of these programs? Yeah, 'cause we have some part-time farmers, and we have people who, you know, somebody works and somebody is out the farm. It's not really their whole income. Is there a threshold?
Not at all. There are a lot of growing trends as these beginning farmers are getting started. You know, we're seeing some start with 40 acres. We're seeing some start with greenhouses. We're starting some see with, in other parts of the state and in other parts of the country, you're seeing community-supported agriculture, where families are working a small number of acres, but maybe they're producing 10 or 15 acres of vegetables, which is very, very work intensive. So we have programs right across the spectrum. I mean, we've done conservation contracts on fields that are 2/10 of an acre. The only limit really for the direct program is you have to have at least 10 acres of historically cropped, you know, base acres. But other than that, there is no limit to working with beginning farmers and with some non-traditional farming practices that are really coming into their own and really growing in popularity across the country.
Now, if you're just starting out and you don't have the history, is there a way to get around that for the first few years, or do you need to report in so you start building a base?
Well, unfortunately, you know, we're not in the process where you can build a base. It's very historical. And so what's there is...
I mean, if you say it takes a three-year history, mm-hmm. should you start reporting for 3 years even if you aren't eligible so that you're building that base and maybe in the fourth year, bingo.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of it is in the future the laws may change, and if we are able to reset... You know, the way that our payment processes are figured out, and we recalculate bases, those people who have reported during those years will obviously be the ones who benefit, and those who didn't simply won't.
Mm-hmm. So it's good to let you folks know what's going on, and it also helps to the whole overall picture of agriculture as far as the government's concerned to know what's being grown out there and where and how they can shape programs to help that out.
That's correct, and it really captures, you know, what the changes are across the farm economy. A lot of these farms that we work with have historic sorghum base acres, barley base acres, oat base acres, and those crops probably haven't been planted for several years. And so, you know, it allows us to capture what changes are happening on the ground, you know, what is planted, where is it planted, and, you know, how do these programs interact with that.
I'm going to be back in 60 seconds.
What do you think of when I say the word retirement? Sunny days in Florida? A quiet lake in northern Michigan? Your first thought should be your Farm Bureau insurance agent. Farm Bureau has helped out thousands of Michigan people enjoy happier, more secure retirements. IRAs and annuities, a lifetime retirement income, big tax advantages, and competitive interest rates. Farm Bureau Life Insurance Company of Michigan is rated one of the 50 most outstanding life insurers in America. So call your Farm Bureau insurance agent today. Remember, it's not who you call after retirement, it's who you call before that makes the difference. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Contact one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents. Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Tim Fritz in Bad Axe, or Deb McBride or Corey Vollmer in Elkton.
Michigan, my Michigan.
We are back. Our guest today on the program is Nathan Prill from the Huron County Farm Service Agency office. He is the executive director. One of the other areas we wanted to talk about today was the Farm Storage Loan Program. I understand that's still in effect.
Absolutely. Right now, we can do a 7, a 10, or a 12-year fixed loan. And currently, the rate for August, which was announced yesterday, a 7-year term is locked in at 2.25% interest. So as long as you have 15% down on the price of a new grain storage bin or hay storage facility, we can do loans.
Up to, because I'm sure it's not open-ended.
It's not, but we can get up now into the $300,000, $400,000, and $500,000 ranges.
That's a big chunk.
Yeah, For loans under $50,000, we don't have to take a mortgage, so it's just secured by the facility itself. If we go over $50,000, we'll usually look to take a mortgage. But other than that, yeah, we have a dedicated farm loan staff through the Farm Service Agency. This is one of those loan programs that is handled by the farm program staff. It's approved through my office, and the county committee approves those loans. And it's always an interesting process. You know, I'm not a loan maker by trade, but I'm learning a lot about the program and really implementing it on the local level. A lot of farmers are looking at increasing storage so they have a little more marketing flexibility. Sometimes if you don't want to, you know, wait in line at the elevator, it's good to have a place to put wheat for a couple of days and then be able to have a flexibility with marketing there. And certainly for corn, you know, you get a crazy year where you get an earlier frost or you have a wet year and you need to dry that corn down. You know, it can pay for itself pretty quickly.
Are there certain crops that are eligible? Because storage in agriculture can be just about anything from storing, you know, grain or a climate-controlled place to store apples over the winter. I mean, it can be just about anything.
Right. Previously, we could only do grain bins. So we could do the dryer, grain leg, conveyors, as long as they were stationary, concrete, everything associated with that. Within the last couple of years, now we can do hay storage, biomass storage. We can do cold storage. So if you want to grow a field of rutabagas and store them for a year, we can do cold storage. We just have a lot more options now with the program and being able to implement it.
And when you say cold storage, it's controlled climate, because we usually don't have trouble with cold in the winter around here.
Yeah, we catch that a lot more in the kind of the fruit and vegetable growing areas of the state. So it doesn't necessarily apply so much here, but it definitely exists if someone was eligible and wanted to do that. Part of the program is you have to have the cropping history. So you have to have the need for additional storage on your farm. And that's just, you know, farm program kind of requirement. So as long as you have that cropping history and as long as you show that you have that need for storage on your farm, really that along with 15% down and, you know, certainly an ability to repay, that's the threshold for eligibility in this program.
And the storage helps you because you can hold it until the price is maybe a little better than right at harvest when there's a glut of it on the market, and you'd still have to pay just to store it at another facility, rather than having your own.
That's correct. And I think, you know, part of the reason Huron County has a lot of what we would call government-approved storage, so you could take a loan on grain stored at our local elevators, and we have a lot of capacity, and the elevators do a very good job locally of having that space available, where in other parts of the country, maybe that's not the case. And so we've been really fortunate to have, you know, local, you know, strong presence of elevators and companies that can store it. It's just farmers are, you know, looking for options into the future, and sometimes that elevator storage works out really well for them, and sometimes depending on how they harvest and how they have their processes on farm, they like to have that storage on farm.
Long-term and quick turnover can make a whole lot of difference in how much your costs are.
It sure can.
And the way things go, you never know what the price is going to be tomorrow. So,
no, and that's the thing. You know, we've entered a period where, you know, the government has less money to work with. You know, the commodity prices have been very volatile over the last 3 or 4 years. And it is just a very interesting time to be in agriculture. You really have to be an expert in so many different areas and have knowledge about marketing, government programs, agronomy, chemicals. It's just... It really is it requires an amazing breadth of skill, you know, to be successful.
Does it usually work out, though, that somebody's bonanza is because of somebody else's failure in another part of the country? We got the drought down south, you know, if it affects crops down there, crops up here will be worth more because there's less of it out there.
I think that can play a part, but certainly now we have a lot more options for marketing, you know, with options for, you know, large livestock operations, that's a place where we can take hay and corn. With ethanol, that's a place where we can market corn. When you have widespread, you know, different entities that are consuming these commodities, it's not all going to food processing. And so you have more options, and that creates more marketing stability. It may not help with the price very much, but having more resources for marketing your crop at the end of a growing season provides a little bit more security. It's just, you know, can you get the price right when it's shifting many dollars a bushel from month to month?
You know you'll sell it, you just don't know for how much.
That's correct.
And the Farm Storage Loan Program, is that a complicated thing? Is that something that usually when you're talking loans, you got to have, you know, all your ducks in line and all of the rest of this, and a lot of private information needs to be available to see that you don't have so much other debt that you're never going to be able to repay this. All those types of things come into play when you're talking loans.
That's right. And, you know, and again, it is a government program, so we require probably, you know, an additional amount than what a private lender would require. But the great thing about it is once you do provide all that information, and we have checklists in the office to make sure that you know exactly what you need, once you get that, really the benefit is that, you know, 2.25%, you know, fixed for 7 years. I don't know what the future holds, but I'm not convinced that, you know, 5 or 6 years from now, the interest rate is going to be 2.25%. So that's the real selling point with the program. It's a lot more work. It's a little more work. It can be a lot more work depending on, you know, how big the loan is and what you're proposing. But the benefit really is that interest rate.
And only one outstanding loan of this type at a time? Or can you come back next year and say, I need more storage?
You can absolutely do that. As long as you still show that need on farm, you can add. It's just any time the loan balance goes over $50,000, we'll be looking for a mortgage. But that's to be expected.
Okay. Other things happening in the office that we need to know about?
We just announced the successful folks who bid for our general sign-up, our CRP sign-up. You know, we always have conservation programs available for folks who want to improve water quality or enroll areas that are adjacent to, you know, water features. If you want to put a filter strip in or do shallow water areas or other things. But the last 2 years we've had two sign-ups, which will allow us to take entire fields. And we didn't get as many accepted as I had expected. I think we had three successful applicants out of 20-some. And so that was a surprise. But, you know, nationwide, you bid what practice you want to put in your field. You work up a price based on the soil type, and then the government can either accept it or not. So we may have one of those in the future, but that's a process that we're working through right now, notifying those producers and telling them what their status is.
Is that something becoming a little more looking towards how much conservation it's going to do rather than a farmer getting a piece of land that really isn't good for much out of his system?
Right. Well, and what we're seeing now, honestly, is kind of a reverse. In the past, when crop prices were low, you could enroll your field into a conservation program, and at least you would know what you'd be getting per acre every year. Well, now with high commodity prices, we're farming a lot. And in some cases, we're even seeing farmers paying money back, you know, all the damages and all of the refunds required to get their land out of conservation so that they can farm and get some of the $7 corn. And it's an interesting process to see. And in the future, you know, we'll see how Congress, you know, just like every other program, conservation programs will be under consideration in the next farm bill. And we'll see exactly how or if we focus to conservation programs as a part of being eligible for farm payments.
In the past, you'd hear phrases like set-aside programs. Is this kind of in lieu of that? Or is that two different programs that are bouncing around my head here?
They're roughly the same. Set aside is really kind of the folksy way that we reference conservation reserve program acres. Okay. It's just a good way of explaining exactly what it's doing. You know, we would call it, you know, a reserve program. We would call it a conservation program, and that's how we would handle that reference. But you're in the right. You've got the right idea.
And are there things you have to do to this land? I mean, it's not just, you know, it's enrolled and ta-da, I'm going to get a check. Do you have to put cover crops on some of this stuff? Do you have to make sure that it's, well, obviously you have to make sure no one's going to go by and see there's corn on it, but I mean.
Right, right.
But the other part of it is, do you have to do something with it for conservation?
Well, and this has been something that we've dealt a lot with this year. So basically at the beginning of the contract, you say what you're going to plant there. You know, you can plant four-way grass mix, you can plant native flowers, you can plant native grasses. And depending on what you bid, you've got to maintain that practice for the duration of the contract. So if we go and see your filter strip and you said you were going to have, you know, switchgrass planted there, and we see thistle and burdock and a lot of other weeds, we're going to require that you maintain that for weeds, because we want to make sure that if you say you're going to have switchgrass there, that there's switchgrass. And so this year we've had a lot of problems with weeds in fields because it's been very difficult to get into some of these acres because it's been so wet. And now we're dealing with requests to mow, to spot spray, to spray, to burn, to disc, to make sure that we're controlling weeds and making sure that that original conservation practice is still in effect.
Kind of confusing to me, because conservation to me would be return it to more of a natural state, which would mean whatever is native should start taking over. But you're making it sound almost like, you know, you have to put in a crop of switchgrass if it doesn't come up.
Yeah, it is. It is planted. And, you know, with the set-aside programs, another thing that we want to do with a lot of them is make sure that there aren't trees going, that it doesn't go to early successional forest. We want to make sure that it still keeps that cropland designation. And so we will plant it in a four-way seeding or native grass, native flowers, or switchgrass. But we want to make sure that that land is still in a practice that, you know, it's still cropland. We're not taking land out of production, ultimately, with these programs.
So if the need arises, there's a disaster someplace where they can't grow crops for several years, and we don't know why, but at least we could recall some of this land into production and get more out there to feed everybody.
Sure, and if you have, you know, 30, 31 million acres of CRP land across America, you know, that's certainly something that farmers would talk about and lobby for in really, really dry years, you know, using these acres for grazing. That happens in some situations. And in other countries around the world, certainly their set-aside acres were pulled out during periods of high commodity prices because, I mean, really, the global grain supplies can get tight at points. And in some countries, it's caused unrest. And, you know, having those acres available is in, you know, the interest of national security.
Is that a double-edged sword, though, pulling stuff out like that? I mean, then you're going to have more out there and prices go down.
Right. Well, and I can't think of a time where that ever happened. You know, sometimes we'll use it for emergency hangar grazing, but taking it back into cropland typically hasn't been a concern.
Here in the States.
Correct.
Okay. If people have questions, they can contact your office, I assume, on any of these programs. I'm sure it's on the web there somewhere, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Number's the same, 269-9549. Extension 2 will get you over to the Farm Service Agency. And, yeah, we, like I said, we've gotten a chance to see a lot of our farmers, and a lot of other folks are starting to come in on farm storage facility loan programs, on disaster programs. We're starting to talk about, you know, what is the 2011 crop season really going to look like? And if it's a bad year, you know, there may be ad hoc programs and permanent disaster programs. It's just every year is different.
Is this kind of the last year you really know what all the programs are going to be with that 2012 Farm Bill pending?
Well, we think 2011 will be stable. We think 2012, with some pretty substantial budget cuts, which may affect, you know, staffing levels across the country. And then, you know, we'll start the process all over again. We had a 2002 Farm Bill, a 2007 that became a 2008 Farm Bill.
Because they couldn't come up with it in 2007, it carried over a little longer.
And now we're going to have a 2012 Farm Bill. So normally those Farm Bills last for 5 years. And, you know, sometimes they stay the same, sometimes programs stay the same, sometimes we add new programs, sometimes we take programs away. So I just think that this year, with all of the discussions on, you know, where the country's at, where the budget's at, where the farm economy is at, there's going to be a pretty close look on exactly how these programs work.
And would probably be a good time for farmers out there to let their legislators know what's been working for them in the past so it stays in there.
You know, if there's a program or something that you feel very strongly about and you start to hear in the news that, you know, certain members of the Farm Committee, you know, that's always something that farmers should be active and they should be aware of, because it does have a tremendous impact on the local level, you know, these programs and the way they work.
I mean, obviously, as a government person, you can't advocate one way or another, but this is the citizens' rights.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll always encourage farmers to be active, to know what's happening, to know how programs are changing. And fortunately, in a place like Huron County, we have farmers that sometimes know about program changes before, you know, it's even announced to, you know, USDA staff. And that's a good thing, because it just shows that these farmers are committed, that this is their career, this is something that matters to them, and it matters to our community. And that gives them a real opportunity to have a say, you know, because it's a tremendous part of our economy, and there's a lot at stake here locally.
And their livelihoods.
Absolutely. That's the most important thing.
Well, thanks for being with us today. Did we cover everything?
I believe we did, Craig. It's always good to be back.
I appreciate you taking time. And again, they can stop by the office, call, or go online, and they can get the information they need on programs and see what they're eligible for. And if there's something that can help them, why not take advantage of it?
Absolutely.
Our guest today on the program has been Nathan Prill from the Farm Service Agency office in Bad Axe. I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at 11, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.
Today's What Do You Think program was brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents. Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.